Good evening. It's good to see you both.
It's been a while. Mm-hmm.
Like it could be a small, very select group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, we can appreciate the connection, this possibility of connecting in a small group, and gives us some flexibility. So, yeah, we'll see. Last couple of weeks, a lot of folks have come like right at 7:30 or a little bit after. So we'll see. And I can also see and welcome folks joining in on Facebook too. So there's that. So we can get started. Oh, I see there's more folks coming. So, just an invitation to get settled and comfortable, and to make it official. This is Portland Inside Meditation Community, Heart of Freedom Meditation. I'm Doug Colton, and it's a pleasure to welcome you this evening, this opportunity for us to practice together, and it's great to see you folks here on this this beautiful summer evening in Portland. I know a few of you folks aren't in Portland, but hopefully you're enjoying summer. And intention, a conscious effort to settle into the present, to whatever degree is possible, to just set aside cares and concerns and preoccupations, so we can really fully bring our energy and awareness to just basking in what it is to be alive in this moment, and connecting to what the life is that's registering with sensations, maybe deepening experience a bit by letting our eyes close. So to make it a little easier to pay attention to what's happening internally, to take that sense of being together in a group with the support of our mutual presence into this investigation, into being curious about what's alive. And sometimes it's prominent and quite clear that there's certain parts of our physical experience that really stand out. And so we could start with that. Maybe it's like those points of contact or pressure. Perhaps the body is experiencing some pain or discomfort. Perhaps there's some pleasant sensation. And so receiving the invitation that life offers in this moment to enter more deeply into presence, just the felt sense, those sensations that we describe as warmth, coolness, tingling, pressure, perhaps the quality of sensation, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, And to expand from a single point, to sweep through the body just briefly, checking in, really inviting this awareness to fully incarnate, to be embodied, and to feel the preciousness of this experience of life as it springs forth in each moment. If it feels like it's helpful to take a long, slow, deep breath or to offer an invitation for softening or relaxation, to bring some ease into the experience, yeah, often that's helpful. And also, to notice those embodied experiences of the breath, the contours of sensation that let us know that the breath is happening in this moment. And in deepening into the experience of presence, it could be helpful in the beginning of a sit to just reflect on taking refuge in this capacity to be awake, to be alert, to take refuge in the coming to direct experience of what the truth of this moment is, discovering for ourselves what's true. And to take refuge in our inexorably intertwined experience of life that we enter our with our community of life, our Sangha, and in this capacity to feel that connection, we find refuge. So traditionally taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, as our place of safety, place of connection. And it starts right here with the experience of this moment, this breath, or this most predominant sensation. And it's releasing any control or constriction, so that the breath just flows naturally. And we have this wonderful opportunity to be flexible with the ever-changing flow of present moment experience. it's helpful to remember that this practice is really about attention to process, the process of the breath, the process of the ever-changing flow of sensations. And it's based on acceptance, based on kindness, based on just allowing this moment to be like this. And it's letting go of attachment to outcomes. It isn't about something in particular that we're trying to achieve or experience. It's about the process of accepting what the universe is offering in this moment. So with this breath, with these sensations, with whatever capacity there is in this moment to be awake, maybe to have a modicum of focus and concentration, significant aspect of mindfulness practice is simply remembering to return and to accept this moment just as it is. Sometimes that's really easy to do, and there's just a natural sort of relaxation and openness. Just a free flow of peace and joy, pleasantness. Sometimes it's much more challenging if there's difficult physical or mental or emotional states. And so to work with challenging present moment experience, we're invited to stay connected with the body and open to the feeling tone. So just a bare registering of, this is how this shows up in the body. This is how it affects the breath in this moment. And the feeling tone may be unpleasant. If that's the case, just the mere recognition to turn it into a mindfulness object, a foundation for mindfulness, instead of something to be resisted or something to be clung to. It's just noted, oh, this is what's happening. It's like this. And so the shift from being identified and caught up in something that's challenging or difficult to being mindful of it is the transformation. It's not getting rid of or stopping or kind of going into a trance state. It's staying here in this moment with this breath when things are like this. And to do so with a quality of tenderness and kindness. So we're not forcing anything. We're not trying to make something happen. So the simple secret is that if you wish to experience peace, make peace with this moment, with this breath. Peace is the fruit of this practice to the degree that we're willing to let things be just as they are, to allow this moment with these sensations, with this breath, to be exactly as it is. And it comes from the willingness to feel it, directly experience it. So just in case it's helpful, a reminder that peace comes from letting go of judgments and commentaries, letting go of the identification with the stream of thoughts that suggests that things should be other than they are in this moment, that we should be other than we are, that the world should be different, that the experience of this moment somehow shouldn't be the way it is. So peace is always found right here in the full embodied experience of this moment, just as it is. It's wonderful to see you folks this evening. And if it's helpful to take a minute or two to stay connected with this body, but do a little stretching or movement, just to bring a little relief, practicing kindness in the form of kind of a tender stretch or movement, or perhaps just a little shaking, whatever is helpful. Just as support, the deepening of practice, like to share with you encouragement about an upcoming day of practice. It's going to be August 5th with Candle Summers at PIMC, both in person and on Zoom. And it's from 10 to 4. The focus is on keeping practice simple. So, sounds like a good focus for the day. So that's coming up on August 5th. And then a reminder that this teaching, this opportunity for us to come together, is sponsored by all of us and the practice of generosity. So my deepest appreciation to everyone who's contributed to making this evening possible, and just an invitation to continue in whatever form you can to make these teachings available. There's a link I posted in the chat for folks on Zoom to connect you to a virtual Donna Bowl. There's a little description there. And then also an invitation, if you aren't already receiving an email from me with announcements, you're welcome to sign up for that. And also just a reminder that I can also meet with folks individually for brief Dharma consults. So there's that. And then if you're on Facebook, you can reach out through the PIMC website, and there's links there for everything that I'm describing. So for the retreat, for registration, for making a contribution, and also volunteer opportunities. So there's that. So I'm curious to listen this evening if there's any sharing that would like to happen. It's totally optional. But if you're sitting with something that's really up, sometimes just sharing a few words with the group with a kind of mindful sort of vulnerability can be a really healing thing. So just to consider the prospect of doing that. And so this the structure is really very simple. Just if you'd like to speak, to unmute yourself and then to say your name. And when you're finished, just to say, yeah, I'm finished. So the next person who might want to share can know that it's their turn. And it's also nice to just create a clear channel for sharing so we don't engage in crosstalk during the sharing circle. So I'll start. My name is Doug, and my allergies have flared up, so I'm experiencing congestion, but softening and less kind of painful as I practice this evening. So I'm grateful for that. Thank you. Thanks for being here with me. I'm grateful.
Was I supposed to say you know my name? Laura. It's been a really busy time lately in the last few weeks. We live on a little island that everybody likes to visit, so we've had lots of company, and there's a lot going on otherwise, and work and so on, and I've been feeling kind of, I don't know, edgy and kind of stressed, and so I was just calling it stressed, and I was kind of blaming it on all these things that are happening. And then last night I realized I feel like life is out of control, and so I was kind of getting into that, and how do I control it? Anyway, tonight's the first night I've been able to come here for a little while, and for some reason I have not been meditating as much as I was. Anyway, what I want to say is the sit tonight has made me realize that, in fact, things are not out of control. And the thing to do when it feels like they are is sit. Anyway, I'm just really grateful for just how much lighter I feel, and and for the clarity that I often get after meditating and after being with the Sangha. And that's it, really. But thank you for being here.
Just appreciating the sitting in silence and connecting. So is there anything else that anybody is just on the verge of sharing before we close?
I will express some gratitude as well for giving the opportunity to tune in to a little bit of pain that I was having. And it was so relatively minor that I wasn't really noticing it. But when I tuned in, this is present. And so it's given me some ideas to implement some strategies to just kind of take some care of that area. It's neck and shoulders. I think a lot of us get stress and tension there. So having the opportunity to just sit quietly and notice things helped me tune into that, and that'll help me take care of my body, I think, mm-hmm. better. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. Okay. Well, I will proceed to share a Dharma reflection, and just a reminder to listen mindfully, from not so much trying to figure things out intellectually, but more to see what resonates in your heart with your own experience, perhaps as a reminder of something that you can deepen into. And so this evening I'm circling back to one of the core aspects of the Buddhist teaching found in the Eightfold Path. It's called right or skillful understanding or view. And it's an invitation to ask a question of our hearts. What do we really value? What do we really care about? What's really important? Because our lives are so short. Things go by so quickly. And we can be complacent and just let our lives kind of disappear in a dream. Or we can wake up. We can really be curious about and create a destiny. So, and often in the beginning of practice, there's this, and in each moment, really, a question. What is happening? And what is it that we aspire to in this life. To reflect on the impermanent nature of life, we can ask some questions. Am I living according to my deepest values and beliefs? Am I living with the intention to become more loving and accepting? There is a tremendous amount of unsatisfactoriness, of anguish, of what the Buddha referred to as dukkha in the world, in just the experience of life, because of the impermanent and fleeting nature. And it's both within our own experience and also what's happening in the world. There's war, there's poverty, there's disease, there's racism, there's homophobia, there's transphobia, just to mention a few. And the question can come up, what does our world need to foster a safe and compassionate existence in our shared human community? And it seems to me that the message from the Buddha is that human suffering and hardship can't really be alleviated by simply changing the external world, but by changing governments or having new monetary policies, although those things might be helpful. But on the deepest level, the suffering that comes from war and starvation and all of the other things that I've mentioned aren't solved by economics and politics alone. That their source is prejudice and fear in the human heart. And that's where the solution lies, according to the Buddha. So, what the Dharma teaches is that if we're bound less by prejudice, less by hatred, and more operating out of love, generosity, mercy, openness, that things get better. And this is a testable hypothesis. We can try it out and see, does meditation practice, does the cultivation of these wholesome qualities actually make a difference? If it does, then stick with it or deepen into it. So this understanding that the Buddha was talking about, this looking at our view, really starts with this. It asks us to touch what we really think is important, to find out what we really care about, and to use that as the basis of our spiritual practice, to really understand the connection between the things that we deeply find precious and actually what we do. So that our actions and our patterns of thinking and speech come more into alignment with what our deepest values and beliefs are. There's this understanding of karma. And karma isn't just a mystical idea about something esoteric like past lives or something like that. It refers to cause and effect. It means that what we do really does make a difference. That how we act creates our future experiences. So if we act in anger, then we start to live in a climate of hate. If we live in fear, we live in a climate of being scared and contracted. And so we end with understanding. We can see if we cultivate compassion, loving kindness, wisdom, then that bears fruit too. So our brains are repositories of conditioning. And we can either be conscious and intentional about that conditioning, or we can let it be kind of running on automatic and be a sponge that absorbs whatever conditioning is happening in the world around us, which may or may not be in accordance with what our values are and the direction that we want to go. So there is an invitation there. Back many years ago, somebody asked my teacher, Ruth Dennison, if she could explain karma very simply. And she said, sure. Karma means you don't get away with nothing, darling. She had a German accent. She grew up in East Prussia. To some every moment, what's happening in this moment conditions the next moment. And that discovery and that understanding is wonderful because there's a possibility of changing the direction that we're going. We can actually train ourselves and transform the climate that we live in. We can practice being loving, being more present, more conscious. We can go on retreats. We can take a practice in daily life. We can practice loving kindness. So then there starts to be a spontaneous, kind of unbidden sort of moving in the direction that leads to peace, leads to transformation. There's a story about a Sufi figure. His name is Mullah Nasruddin, who's both a fool and a wise man at the same time. And he was out in his garden sprinkling breadcrumbs around the flower beds one day. And a neighbor came by and asked him, Mullah, so what's up with that? And why are you doing that? And Nasruddin answered, oh, I do it to keep the tigers away. And the neighbor said, but there aren't any tigers within thousands of miles of here. And Nasruddin replied, effective, isn't it? So I'm not suggesting that spiritual practice is a mindless repetition of ritual or prayer or superstition. It's based on skillful understanding of cause and effect. And to actually bring our lives into alignment with that. So perhaps we can sense the potential for awakening in ourselves, but we also can see that it doesn't happen by itself. There are the understanding that with practice, with paying attention, we can intentionally cultivate the qualities that we want to see. So if we want peace, we can practice with the intention of being peaceful, and so on. And just to share perhaps some inspirational quotes. So this kind of understanding that the Buddha was talking about isn't really merely intellectual understanding, although that's where it starts from. I mean, we have to have some intellectual conceptual frame to kind of know, oh, okay, that's what I need to do. But it doesn't stop there. It is instead a thorough and ultimately penetrating understanding of the Four Noble Truths. This is according to Wapala Rahula, who wrote the book, What the Buddha Taught. It's seeing a thing in its true nature without name and label. So it's a non-conceptual, direct experiential understanding. Or Vietnamese Zen master, who's Thich Nhat Hanh, said, our happiness and the happiness of those around us depend on the degree of our skillful understanding, our skillful view. So touching reality deeply, knowing what's going on inside and outside of ourselves, is the way to liberate ourselves from dukkha, from suffering. And it's caused by having mistaken views, or being under the influence of delusion, or making erroneous assumptions about causality. Nasruddin is a wonderful example of that. Just because something is correlated doesn't mean that it's causal. And going back to Thich Nhat Hanh, right view isn't an ideology, a system, or even a path. It's the insight that we have into the reality of life. It's a living insight that fills us with understanding, peace, and metta, love. There's this, and it comes in the context of the Eightfold Path, and it may seem like it's linear, like we start with skillful view, but actually they're mutually interdependent, the spokes of the Eightfold Path. Ethical conduct through right speech, right action, right livelihood supports skillful view. Cultivation of compassion and wisdom, two wings of Buddhism, come through understanding, through our willingness to be present with things that are challenging or difficult. That comes from skillful view. Compassion helps us break through our narrow self-centered views, which also enables wisdom. And wisdom helps us realize nothing is really separate, which then cycles back into compassion. All of this is based on skillful seeing. There's a mutually interdependent nature found in the Eightfold Path. So this evening, though, there's a simple statement that I'd like to convey to you. It's probably the core of my teaching for this evening. And that statement is that the means of practice should reflect the goal. So the goal of Dharma practice could be described in different ways through different aspects, but one aspect of the goal is to become more peaceful, to attain a deep abiding sense of peace, to be at peace in this world that we live in. So for the means to reflect the goal, there has to be peace in practice. The practice itself needs to be peaceful. So it's non-coercive, non-forcing. So there's another formulation that people outside of Dharma practice have used, and it's that if you want peace, be peaceful. If you want kindness, be kind. If you want compassion, be compassionate. If you want joy, be joyful. Peace, compassion, joy, kindness, are all of the inner way that the goal of practice is experienced. And we bring it into the world. And the world is transformed. It took me a long time to realize that, so I really want to share it with you this evening to really emphasize that there, that it isn't practicing in a way that's coercive, forceful, or impatient or whatever, and being identified with that. It's more about how do I make space in my heart and mind for the way things are in this moment, making peace with this moment. Sometimes the way people do meditation practice doesn't reflect the qualities that they want to achieve. So, for example, there were times when I strove, when I was greedy for some kind of spiritual attainment or some kind of result, or there was a kind of aversion to the experience I was having, or I tried to push things away, tried to get rid of it, or tried not to have the experiences that I didn't think were what should be happening. The presence of greed, aversion, or delusion doesn't reflect the goal. So if I'm identified with those, then unfortunately I'm not going to achieve what I set out to achieve. So in this tradition, the goal of practice is to reach a place where the mind is free from greed, hatred, and delusion. And freedom isn't the absence of those mental emotional states. It's the non-identification. It's the recognition of them and not acting on them. That's what leads to freedom. So, because if we go to war with greed, hatred, and delusion, what happens? We're just creating more distress. We're just creating more of what we don't want. It's just like when there's judgment in the mind. If we're judging and then we notice it and we don't like the judging and we start judging the judging, then what do we get? Just more judgment. So one of the brilliant, simple but profound interventions that the Buddha discovered is to be present, to observe without clinging or resisting. That's where freedom comes from. So my invitation for you this evening is that with whatever practice you are doing, whether it's breath meditation, whether it's loving kindness, whether it's chanting a mantra, whether it's visualization, whether you're practicing right speech, whether you're practicing mindfulness, washing dishes, or working, or any activity that you want to turn into a practice, to ask the question, is this practice reflecting the goal? So in our relationships, to ask the question, is there an absence of identification with greed, hatred, and delusion? Are there some feelings of peace and ease? And it doesn't mean that we have to be peaceful in some conventional fashion. Instead, it means that the way we relate to conflict or aggression or tension is reflecting that you are at peace or relaxed a little bit or accepting, oh, this is what's happening in the present moment. This is a mind filled with aggression, or this is a mind that's filled with peace. That comes directly from the Satipatthana Sutta. To notice what the state is. And that's how we experience freedom. And there starts to be the freedom to choose. If there's a mental state that's unwholesome, we don't have to act on that unwholesome mental state or emotional state. So one of the ways that I found we can relate to practice is that we can be content with small steps to do the things we can't do, instead of setting ourselves up with huge expectations to make it guaranteed doable. I can absolutely be present with brushing my teeth here for the next 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever it is. Then I can notice standing, for example. Then we can build on that. Can I be hold the intention of kindness when and patience when someone is talking more than I intended to be able to listen? And maybe I can learn something about how to be patient and accepting. And just taking these everyday examples, we can start to see that a little seed of mindful intention can grow and become something much bigger. And I'd like to suggest to you that this idea, this notion that our goal, what we're trying to achieve from our practice should be reflected in the means, is a built-in safety mechanism for our meditation practice. You'll not get in trouble because we don't have to bury ourselves in excess zeal or aversion or conceit or self-depreciation. There's a variety of problems that can arise when we relate to the world or to the activities of the world in this way. So if you look at the quality of the means manifesting as some of the goal, it'll be a protection from going awry, from making the practice arduous and not enjoyable. Because if it's arduous and not enjoyable, you aren't going to keep doing it. You're going to give up. So it needs to be something you look forward to, that's pleasant, that brings fruits. So it doesn't mean that practice is not sometimes very difficult, but there can still be a kind of joy in that. If there isn't any joy in your practice, then you won't keep practicing. So to look for that, to look for those opportunities, to take some time each day and notice pleasantness, to make room for that. Just to share a story, perhaps a little bit of the inspiration. There's a teacher down in the Bay Area. His name is Lou Richman. He was a student of Suzuki Roshi back many years ago, back in the 1960s. And he asked Suzuki Roshi, "So if I do this practice, this Zazen mindfulness meditation practice, it doesn't mean I'm going to get enlightened?" And Suzuki Roshi said, "If your practice is sincere, it is almost as good." So that's pretty good. I mean, even if we aren't going to necessarily become the Buddha in this lifetime, things tend to go much better if we practice in this way. That's skillful understanding. So if your practice is sincere, then you have sincere qualities of how you are in relationship to the practice. And that's a wonderful thing. Even if the guidance that you're getting from a teacher or reading a book isn't totally skillful, if your heart is sincere and your practice is sincere, that will more than make up for it. That's a wonderful thing. If your practice is filled with conceit and striving and aversion, then that doesn't lead to becoming free. So what this means is that a really important part of any spiritual practice that we do is self-reflection, in which we become aware of the attitude that we have about practicing. So it includes the attitude you have towards meditation, towards mindfulness in daily life. And, you know, I'll have to be honest with you, for me, this was a long time in coming. I practiced for a lot of years before I paid attention to the attitude I had as I did the practice. For example, if the instruction is to stay with the breath, then I will try to stay with my breath. But the breath seems to be the point, and by focusing on the breath, I'm noticing the attitude I have as I'm focusing on it, because that's not the breath. So I can go on for a long time striving and pushing and demanding and judging myself negatively for not doing this breath meditation right, because my mind is wandering all over the place. And so it's important to step back and look at the attitude. That's why I tend to emphasize, maybe sometimes overemphasize, kindness and acceptance and peace. Because if we aren't bringing that in to our practice in the present moment, then we aren't going to get the results that we're looking for. So the invitation tonight is to look at the attitude that you have in relationship to your practice, to your life, to your daily life. That's one of those things to remember that I was referring to during the guided meditation. Yeah, just checking our time here. I'm going to pause here. I have more I could share, but I think it's important to check back in and see if there's questions or sharing, anything bubbling up for you this evening that you'd like to share with the group. So, as I suggested during the guided meditation, that skillful understanding is really paying attention to the process of relationship to the present moment. And it isn't so much about the content or about, you could say, the what, but it's more about the how. So Buddhist practice, Dharma practice, is much more about how we are with what's happening in the present moment. And if we can focus on how we are in relationship, then we can find out how to be at peace and happy and content with whatever's happening in the present moment. Because everything is changing, constant stream of change. We can't totally predict how things are going to change. And it often doesn't go according to what we prefer, what our plans are. So if our happiness and peace and contentment are dependent on control, that's not a very solid foundation for peace, contentment, happiness. And so working with being here with how we are, with how we are, is a reflection of skillful understanding. And it isn't about being perfect. Whether you find the perfect thing to do or not, or whether you find the perfect relationship or the perfect job, or you find some treasures or inner well-being or compassion, you ultimately find those things by actually letting go of trying to make them happen. It's the discovery of our true nature, of our Buddha nature, comes from resting in the present moment, in the stream of experience. And so what happens is that we can find independence from being buffeted about by the ever-changing nature of life and the conditions that we find ourselves in. It comes from having this quality of inner peace, inner well-being, inner security, a kind of inner fullness and an inner refuge that sustains us, that liberates us, no matter where we go, what we do, who we're with. It's headed in that direction. And this thing is here in the present moment, not outside of us. And so that's my invitation for us this evening. And I'd just like to invite a mindful reflection here. And perhaps this is already happening just in the context of this talk, but I'm going to give us a little bit more space here to just reflect on and perhaps letting your eyes close if that's helpful. How these ideas are present for you or alive for you or reflected in your practice? And are there ways you can deepen into this shift, into being in the process of your experience instead of being attached to the results, attached to outcomes? And to also just notice what comes up as I invite you to reflect on what are your aspirations for your practice? What are the goals that you would like to be able to achieve? And to recognize, what is it that you do that helps you move in that direction, to live according to your deepest values and beliefs? My experience is that positive change comes from recognition of what we'd like to see more of. It doesn't come from beating ourselves up. It comes from recognition of the maybe nascent qualities that we'd like to strengthen, and saying yes to those and strengthening those. So noticing what comes up, what is it that we'd like to strengthen through our awareness, through our acceptance. And then I'm going to bring this this brief reflection to a close, and then just circle back and check in one last time here before we close our evening together to see, is there anything anyone would like to share? Any, just a few words about what your experience is, or a brief question before we close.
That's really interesting for me, because I don't tend to exactly set goals. I haven't really thought about what my goal is, because the practice itself has, like, it gives me so much already. But it was a great opportunity to actually think about it, and I guess my intention is to become, to extend mindfulness into more and more parts of my life, and to have the clarity that comes with that. It's very simple. I'm not sure I'm looking for enlightenment, but I want to be able to do more of what I'm learning can be now. Yeah, that's all I think. I used to think that's all. Yeah, it is. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Appreciate it. Yeah. Sharing before we close here. Okay, well, so in the spirit of skillful understanding and cultivation, I'd like to invite us to do a closing metta practice, cultivation of kindness. And so if that's it could be an invitation for you, invited to notice, in your own heart and mind, what you'd like to wish for yourself, or what would bring more balance or peace or acceptance. Yeah, it could be simple, like, may I learn to accept myself more when I make mistakes, or could be more like, I accept my partner even when they say things that I don't agree with or find difficult, or whatever seems like it would be relevant or helpful for you, just to plant those seeds, understanding what we focus on with mindful intention and clarity tends to get cultivated, strengthened. And And if it's challenging to wish yourself well, or if you find it more compelling to think of another person right at the beginning, you're welcome to do that. I invite you to start with someone who's really easy. Your heart just opens to wishing them well and noticing how that perhaps makes it a little easier to step in to the space of heart cultivation, extending those wishes in perhaps in the form of phrases, simple phrases like may you be happy or may you be safe. Yeah, and letting those be repeated a few times. And yeah, just feeling that flow of intention. Maybe it's more energetic, maybe it's a felt sense. And when you're ready, if you're willing and would like to extend those out beyond yourself or this one person, perhaps extending into our gathering here this evening, wishing our Sangha well, wishing our fellow mindfulness practitioners, our Dharma friends well, including all of our friends on Facebook and Zoom and then larger communities, dear friends, family, loved ones, people who are going through challenging times, people who are experiencing wonderful things, moving in all directions, extending our wishes to those who are being born, to those who are dying, and all of the experiences that come in between, to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west, to beings of the air, land, waters, seen and unseen, extending our wishes in all directions. And I'd like to invite you, if you're interested and would enjoy it, to join me in chanting. And on Zoom, you're welcome to unmute. And we'll chant, may all beings be happy, three times, and then sadhu, which means so be it, three times. Hey, all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Thank you, my friends.
It's a pleasure to get a chance
to share this with you. Take what's good and continue to practice. Anything that's not helpful, just let it go. And please, take good care, and hopefully we'll see you again next week. Take care.
Thank you, Doug.
Bye. Thank you, everybody. Bye, everybody.
Bye.